Hey, it's Dan here. If you want to hear this episode of the Backchat podcast without ads and get extra content that no one else gets, head to backchatstudios.com.au where you can sign up as a patron and access all of our bloody good merch.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Righto, this week on Backchat, Josh Carter, you'd know him as Josh Hill, Western Bulldogs and the West Coast Eagles across his journey in the AFL. This one's a great chat. We debuted in the same game. We talk about issues we both faced across the journey as well as some faced just by Josh Hill as an Indigenous player in the game. This is a really interesting chat and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Make sure you follow us on YouTube or you know what you're doing if you're listening along on Backchat Studios as well. Enjoy it. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of Backchat. We are joined this week, Dan, by Josh Hill. Most footy fans would know this man by Western Bulldogs and West Coast supporters. Going by Josh Carter these days. I'm going to call him Hilly most likely because that's how I've known him forever. Hilly Dad joins us on the potty. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. How you been?
Good, good.
Thanks for coming in, Hilly.
Dan, Josh,
yes,
Dan.
Yes, hello, mate. Nice he just, like, we had the front door open at our studio when I was just there working away, and then all of a sudden there was a figure that just bolted into our office and scared me. Hello, mate.
Yeah, how you going, mate? Yeah, it's good to be here. And I don't know about a figure, but yeah, look, I still try to look after myself, unlike Will here, so it's good to be back in WA. Yeah.
Now, Hilly, I did say you haven't aged one little bit, mate. You're still playing footy, kicking bags down at St. Albans. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the first question we ask every guest here on the podcast, which is powered by Paywise, by the way, Backchat powered by Paywise in season 2024. We want to know your greatest sporting achievement. Now, we know you've, you know, won a Glendenning medal. We know you've kicked bags of goals in the AFL. You've played over 170 games at the top level. We've played across two clubs.
Good YouTube highlights.
Yeah, look, that's great. Taking hangers, kicking goals. We know you're a good footy player, but we want to know your greatest sporting achievement. Thanks to Tab Touch, not on the football field.
Not on the football field.
Right, so Dan Conn's cricketer back
16,
in the day.
Yeah, that's under 12's grand final, bowled 5 for 16, lost the grand final, doesn't matter.
Yep. I was a state hurling champion, a state flags champion. Yep. I could do things outside of football. Hilly, what could you do not on the football field? I know you're a sports person growing up, so give us your greatest sporting achievement at any level.
Well, mate, I'm surprised that you forgot because, you know, we went to Cambodia together.
We did.
And we travelled. We hit a few bars over there and we hit a few karaoke bars and I do love my karaoke. So I'm a bit of a karaoke specialist and I love to sing the karaoke. So I'll put that up there as well.
What's your go-to? Go-to song?
I thought you were, well, give us your go-to.
Go-to? Oh, well, we talked about it actually. It was Neon Moon. Definitely. I love a bit of country. I'm a country fan.
But I thought you were going to mention when we played the Cambodian kids in volleyball. You remember that?
I didn't want to bring that up.
And
but
they,
you know,
touched
what we
us
did?
Up.
Yeah, they did touch us up. That's what I didn't want to talk about. They embarrassed us. Yes, they were.
So we went out to an orphanage in Cambodia. And that was a great trip, by the way.
A really good trip.
Built houses
huts
for them,
yep.
Basically. Yep. Hopefully they're still standing.
I can't speak for
Hilly's tradesmanship over there. But we played them in a game of like beach volleyball on a court at their school, and they were amazing.
They were so gifted.
Like, they were amazing. Mm. So Hilly's greatest sporting achievement, other than the karaoke bar, is getting done by some Cambodian children.
We'll take that, definitely.
Yeah, that's volleyball. Good. Yep.
Very good, Hilly. Now, I want to get into your career, but before we get there, talk to us about your upbringing, mate. Where'd you grow up? Sporting life, and then how did you make the transition to Perth and into footy?
Yeah, so I was born in Subiaco, actually, so local boy, and then moved around a fair bit growing up as a young fella, a toddler. So I've been to Adelaide, lived there for a few years, travelling out with a family, then moved up to Broome, lived for 2 years, went to Cable Beach Primary School, did a lot of sports, you know, footy, athletics and all that, and lucky enough to get a scholarship to Trinity College just down the road here, and did my 5 years there, and Yeah, that was the end of it, really. Got the phone call from the Dogs, said pack your bags and move over. And the funny thing about that last year at Trinity was I was stacking shelves at IGA, believe it or not, me working in the shelves. And yeah, so earning my own cash to get in and out because I was living out of Joondalup at the time to travel all the way into school. And yeah, like it was just focusing on just getting through school, really. Education was my priority, believe it or not, Will, but I did actually focus on school.
Don't tell me but the yeah, it insults was... I haven't given yet,
I know you're bagging them away, don't worry. But yeah, so at the end of that year, you know, with schoolies and everything, we'd booked a trip to go across to Rotto. And all the boys, you know, were excited to get pumped up and get pissed and get blind on the beers. And I've put my accommodation in, booked at everything that I've worked hard to book for. And then get the phone call to say, pack your bags, mate, you're moving to Melbourne. And, so all of my mates have taken my accommodation, drank all my piss, and now I've got nothing but running laps with bloody Brad Johnson, Akamatis, getting beat up by these big brutes over there in Victoria.
Yeah, moving in next to Barry Hall.
No, he wasn't there yet, but yeah, I did have Akamatis, who was up and down, a bit of a mentor, and yeah, can be a bit full of it sometimes, but he was a funny man.
You went to school with Pat McGinnity, didn't you?
Yeah, whole Ginner. And played state footy with Chris Marston too. Can you believe that?
Wow,
15s to 16. I know. It's crazy to think that I actually knew these blokes before footy and they're still the same dickheads that they are. Really.
Did you try and get the leavers trip like state? Because we've had some other guys say that, you know, you get a call, you've been drafted. Oh, thanks, mate. We'll see you tomorrow. And they're like, well, I've got leavers. Mm. I don't want to stay here. But like, I don't know. We haven't had many people that have actually been able to commit to the leavers trip.
And who rang you?
Rocket rang me. And, believe it or not, he was actually a nice person at that time. And then after that, there was no good conversations at all after that. And the funny thing actually was before that, I had North Melbourne come to my house. And so two recruiters came across and they said, mate, look, we'll be brutally honest. You're not going to get picked because your figure, we can tell you're going to get snapped in half. You're not going to be able to play in the top league. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's the kind of confidence I need, isn't it? And so from that day on, every time I played Kangaroos, I ended up smashing them because that was my motivation I needed.
You walked into a pretty successful club in the Western Bulldogs, getting drafted pick 61 in the same draft as me, mate. I was pick 50, so I'm lucky.
Okay, rub it in.
But, you know, Rowan Smith, Brad Johnson, Luke Darcy.
Chris Grant.
Yeah, Chris Grant, Akimanis.
Scotty West, yeah.
Like that's you must have been around some like great influences on your career to start things.
Yeah, look, as I said, walking into that door, the first welcoming was Brad Johnson, you know, the smiling assassin comes up to you, shakes your hand, and he was just that kind of face that I needed that reassurance. It was like a wake-up call, you know, like this is the big league. You know, these are the guys you're going to be spending your day-to-day life with. And you're walking through these doors and then there's Luke Darcy reading a newspaper, doesn't even acknowledge me. But, you know, whatever, I've got these guys around me that are going to be, you know, like a family, like brothers. And, yeah, it was quite intimidating. You walk and you see all these figures and then there's Akamatis, you know, three-time premiership player, Brownlow medalist. And I'm thinking, how am I going to get along with this bloke? And, then, believe it or not, he's come up to me and said, how are you going, brother? You know, and we've just given each other hugs and he's been my best mate since, you know, like he's such a good fella. Unfortunately, he was actually my MC at my wedding. I didn't invite him, but he invited himself. But yeah, he's since this, to
ask,
this day. Yeah,
I was going to ask, have you got any good ACCA stories?
Oh, I've got plenty of ACCA stories. Don't worry about that.
Anything can be shared?
Yeah, I've got plenty.
Give us one.
Well, we've been to Hong Kong, right? My first footy trip was Hong Kong at the Bulldogs. And we actually ended up on the news. It was reports that we were doing the worm and the slides all over the taxis. And it's actually on there. If you look it up
that,
on YouTube,
I've seen this.
You've seen it.
Were you on there?
I was on that footy trip. And I hated it, to be honest, because it was like, these guys just were drinking machines. I couldn't keep up with them.
Cooney was doing the worm.
Cooney went down the esky lid down the hill.
Like Waffle.
Andrew Hooper was doing the worm across the taxi roof. Easton Wood was sitting on the front bumper of the car and he wouldn't move. And I'm like, these guys are just idiots, you know.
And you were sitting there not having
I'm
a beer.
I'm sitting there thinking,
bullshit,
Hilly. I was looking for the nearest karaoke bar, believe it or not. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a good trip. And the funny thing was these agents come up to me in ACCA and they're like, oh, where are you guys from? And we're like, oh, we're from Australia. And they're like, oh, all you Aussies we heard, we look alike. And then Acker's like, hang on. Did he just say that to us? And so he goes, Warner, did you hear what he just said to me? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what he's talking about. But because look at them, they're brothers and sisters, you know, they look like they're all related. He goes, yeah, they're all the same bloody height too, aren't they? They're little midget Fs, you know. I was like, okay, Acker, yeah, let's just get away from them, you know.
Hilly, that's your first footy trip. That was the end of your first year. You debuted in that season. So a fun fact, you and I debuted in the same game, in the same number 31.
Were you 31 as well? Wow.
Yeah, 31 for Scotty.
You've always been 31.
31 for Hilly.
Yep.
Did you get on before me? Because I was on the bench till about 5 minutes to go in the second quarter.
No, I think we got on the same time, actually. It was the build-up to it was so just – my anxiety was through the roof. We were getting pumped anyway because, you know, you had Cousins, Kerr, Judd all in the midfield and you were just smashing the shit out of us. We couldn't find a way. And the worst thing about that day was I had no time to prepare mentally for it. I'd found out at lunchtime that day. So Rocket rang me when – I was at High Point Shopping Centre with my family at lunch.
Couple of sausage rolls.
Getting a couple of sausage rolls. I was getting stuff in my face. So it was the first emergency thing. There's no chance I'm playing. And he's ringing me in the car park saying, mate, I hope you're ready for tonight because you're going to be coming in because Scotty West isn't playing. Right. And I'm like, who are we playing again? And he goes, we're playing the Eagles. And I'm like, shit, they've just won the premiership the year before. We're going to get smashed tonight. And yeah, the whole build up to it, my head was just not in the right space. So I've gone out on the field halfway through the second quarter and there's none other than Daniel Chick. And he's beaten the crap out of me. He said, mate, I'm going to make your night a living hell. And believe it or not, I had 5 touches or 6 touches that night.
You had 10, mate. Yeah,
did I? I had 10 touches. There you go. I didn't feel like it because I was so intimidated by this guy. And then just seeing the midfield you guys had, we were getting pummeled. And I didn't play another game the rest of that season.
What happened? Did you get, like, was it just dropped and not selected again? Yeah. Or injured? Or
well, we had Scotty West back, so he didn't need me.
I don't think it's that rare for it, you know, debutant their first season not to play another game. Like, I only played 3 in mine, but. Mm. What happened to the number? The number 31, you never wore it again.
Well, that was probably my bad luck, was playing one game in 31.
One and done.
Well,
what happened?
20 became available and I was like, you know what, I'm going to work my way down because I wanted to get 10 by the end of it. Nathan Eagleton didn't retire until I left. And then, so I stuck with 20 and got a lot of games out of that number.
Mate, the next year you played 18 games, 2008, Rising Star nominee, played in 3 finals, played in a prelim final in your second year.
Yep.
So I do know you can be a fast talker and you can talk a bit of shit, but mate, and you can be self-deprecating, which I like that as a trait in someone. But to play 18 games in your second year, playing a prelim final, like you found a spot in the side, in a good side. Mm. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, look, it was tough to break into at first, but it all started really in the NAB Cup. You know, we had a pretty tough journey coming in and we played with guys like, you know, Essendon and Hawthorn and, you know, I had a good run in against the Bombers. And then I think that was where Rocket said to me, mate, we want to see what we can do this year because we believe you've got some strengths about you with your overhead marking and your tackle pressure and all that. And I was like, okay, where do you want me to play? And he goes, well, we want you to play as a small forward. But believe it or not, I was actually the tallest forward with a forward line like Jason Agamatis, Brad Johnson, Mitch Hahn. I was actually the tallest. Probably. Eagleton was in and out on the wing. And yeah, we had Scotty Welch actually come across from the Crows. And we were a small forward line, you know, and believe it, like we had a great season making it into the finals and the Cats and Dogs was always that rivalry. And by the time we got to the finals, we end up losing against the Cats at the MCG and that would have got us into the grand final. So that was a really good year, but a bit disappointed. But for myself, you know, to have that experience was amazing in itself.
Were you always a small forward in your footy growing up?
I've always been a small forward. But people come up to me like, how are you a small forward? I'm like, well, have you seen Josh Kennedy? He's not small.
Have you got any good Rocket Ead stories? Because he was your coach at the Bulldogs and we've seen, I don't know, we've seen some highlights of Rocket going off. Were you ever in the firing line from?
No, mate, I was his whipping boy. Yeah. It was me and Brian Lake were his whipping boys.
Is that right?
I picked the worst spot to sit in the theatre room because every time the meeting was on, I'd be sitting right in front of Brian Lake, which was, you know, Rocket's eye line. And every time he'd try and spray Lakey, sometimes even I wasn't even playing, right? I was playing VFL and he goes, Helly, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, I'm not even doing anything. I'm listening to you talking. He goes, you're in my eyesight. Get out of the fucking way. You know, I'm talking to Lakey. And I'm like, well, I've done nothing wrong. And he goes, you're going to do bloody 4Ks after this. And I'm like, you're not serious. He goes, yeah, you will. So I actually had to run after a meeting. That's how intimidating the man was.
Just because he wanted to spray.
Because he wanted Lakey. To spray Lakey, but I'm actually in his eyesight. And it was, yeah, he was such an intimidating man, you know, like it was really old school in the way he would go about his business. And that's why I loved coming across to Woosha, you know, like there was an open door, closed door policy. And I come across to the Eagles and Woosha goes, mate, I don't have a door on my hinges. You know, he was just like, you got any concerns or anything away from the footy club, you come and talk to me. And I loved that about him.
So you enjoyed your time under Woosha a little bit more than Rocket, without sledging Rocket, but like the positives of Woosha.
In terms of a player's mindset, like you feel more comfortable approaching a guy like Woosha. You know, he's still an intimidating figure the way he goes about his business, but the way he presented himself to me made me have that reassurance that he was a comfortable, like a coach that I was comfortable enough to talk to.
You played in the Indigenous All-Stars in 2009 after playing every game that year. Mm. That's another feather in the cap that not everyone gets to do.
Yeah, look, it's as a young Indigenous person coming in the AFL, you know, like you pinch yourself kind of thinking that I'm already in the AFL, but there's these legends of the games that are still that I'm going to be going up against every week, you know, like playing against Andrew McLeod in my second game for the Bulldogs and then playing against Adam Goods the week after, you know, like these are legends of the game. And then to go into the camp in 2009 and playing against, I think it was Richmond up in Darwin, and we just demolished them. You know, it was such a good feeling just having these guys around me on the same field. Like, yeah, I play against them, but now I'm actually sharing the same jumper with these players. And then to know that, you know, I've built a great relationship with him, you know, a friendship that with these guys that I never thought I'd ever end up growing up in my life, be so comfortable to actually talk to these guys because I didn't know anything about them. But then to see a different side to them to what I see on the football field, it's just, it shows, you know, like we're all in the same boat. It's quite intimidating, but also the respect that you all share, that cultural awareness of your past, you know, we've all got a story to share, but to share the same field in that moment, in that camp, the history we've learned about each other was amazing.
Did that continue on through the season and stuff? Was there like group chats and stuff?
Yep. We'd catch up for coffees before games. And then even when they're in the same town, like when I'd play the Bulldogs, you know, me and Harbour being previous teammates, we'd catch up before a game. And sometimes I'd cop it for it because other boys at the Dogs would be like, "Why are you two catching up? What are you got talking on here?" And I was like, "Well, he's going to tell me I'm going to smash you. And then he's going to come and try and smash me." But yeah, you'd build those relationships a lot more comfortable. Like, unlike the Selwood boys, whenever they played each other, you think they want to kill each other, you know? And does that stop when they go home? We don't know.
Well, I reckon that, like, that feels like it's an Indigenous trait, like the connection. And I always used to see all of you boys and be like, how is it like your family? And some of you are, right? But, like, a lot of you aren't. But you treat each other like family? Well, you couldn't say that about white Caucasian players playing in the AFL. Like, why do you think that is?
I think it's just that natural comfort, you know, like of knowing that we've got the same issues, you know, growing up. And like I copped racism growing up as a young kid, some of the other players have as well. And believe it or not, like when we have these camps, we have those discussions, you know, we talk about the hard things. And the harsh truth is that the AFL at that time coming in was so against supporting, well, not so much so against it, sorry, but like there was not much cultural awareness in terms of how do you deal with that abuse for a player. Like Goodsy was getting booed every game, you know, at that time. How did he get the support he needed? Young players like Eddie Betts were still coming through. Cyril, we didn't know what was going on in their personal lives. Their mental health was, they controlled it in such a respectful way that they would hide it away when they came to the football club that nobody knows what they're dealing with. And I think that's why we supported each other so well, because we could understand what each other's going through and have those tough conversations, which then made us a lot more closer as family.
I think as teammates of Indigenous guys, and you know, you're one of them, and Jets and Flying and Willie, all these boys, right? I reckon just on reflection, and especially like with what we've seen, the Hawthorn stuff, a lot of Eddie's stuff over the last couple of years, I don't know as a teammate, I'll just speak for myself and anyone else. I don't think I understood it enough that, you know, issues or things you guys were dealing with was much different to me. And whether or not that was a positive or a negative thing, like, you know, I always just looked at you, I still do, just a mate. I don't look at you as my Indigenous mate.
Yeah.
It's like Hilly. Yeah. Right. So I don't know. I've been reflecting on it. Like, on reflection, I don't know if your teammates, i.e. me and others, really understood it or maybe understand it. I don't know. Does that make sense to
you? Yeah, it does. And look, I think I'm a big believer that the lack of education that was provided to AFL clubs, but not just clubs, you know, within the schooling departments as well, like working now with over in the government in Victoria, it's becoming more common to the fact that there is not enough education provided to young people growing up about Aboriginal education. Like if you had had more, say, cultural awareness training sessions with Madge, you know, at the time, you'd learn a bit more about how to deal with what we're going through. Like I love now that the AFL is coming to an understanding that if a player's dealing with sorry business, like a funeral or something going on with their home life, they give them that time off, that space. Whereas my time with the Bulldogs, I didn't get any of that. It was either play football or you're done. Like the contract was, it made me feel like I had no other choice but to focus on football. Like I missed so many funerals because Rocket said, your commitment's to us. I there was a final against Sydney Swans at the MCG. And I said to him, mate, I can't play this week. I've got to go home to a funeral. And he goes, no, you're not. You're going to play this week. If you don't, you're done.
Wow.
It was simply like that.
And so just understanding as well, funerals to some people aren't important.
Mm.
But for Indigenous families, it feels like it is more important. And it's like everything, right?
Yep.
It's bigger than football.
Bigger than football.
That's why that's a big issue?
Yep.
Is that right?
To us, always, it's family first. Mm. And we would always have that as a priority. But being, as I said, with the AFL industry, the way it made you feel coming into it, it was so intimidating that you had to make it your priority because you were so scared that somebody was just going to, you know, get rid of you and have somebody take your spot. Because that's how it felt. You know, you got 43 players on a list, 23 get selected each week. If you don't perform or you don't do the right thing by your coaching staff or the board, they're going to get rid of you. Someone else is going to come in. And that's the way I always felt throughout my career.
Mm. Do you think from 07 when you started the Bulldogs to 2017 retiring, Do you did that change or get better over that time? Like, was that enough time where you could see the AFL started to make changes?
I'll be honest, it's hard to say this, but the only time I felt comfortable believing that I was a chance and more cemented my spot was 2012 at the Eagles. You know, like I'd had a good run in the NAB Cup. Leke obviously had an injury. Nick Nikoski had an injury. That was my opportunity to cement a position. And I did. You know, as a small forward, I think I was leading goal scorer for a while. And, you know, working alongside guys like JK, Lynchy, Darling, you know, like they were so exciting at that time, weren't they? Like we had such a good side then. That was when I felt so comfortable in my own shell that I had the support away from the football club, my family, my friends, they were all there. But then coming to the club as well, you know, I felt that support around me because we had the Aboriginal liaison. At the Bulldogs, there was no Aboriginal liaison officer. So for an Aboriginal person to know that there's that support off field, like Phil Nagle, it made me feel more comfortable to be able to play to my best of my abilities because my headspace wasn't focused on what was going on around, you know, away from the football grounds. It was my priority was what happened on the field.
And
that's how I felt.
Selection issues, they're not, you know, that's not an Indigenous issue, right? Like I lived your life as well, mate, yeah. Like selection, living on the edge the entire career. But perhaps the support needed is different, like because your upbringing is different to mine. You value things differently than I do. So the support around selection, like I was always a bit of a, you know, lead with the stick type of thing, like Scully, you're out, you know, this is why and see you later. And that used to actually be good for me, but like maybe someone like you or, you know, a young Indigenous guy that's grown up in a, you know, different way than I have, that's the difference, do you reckon? Like, because obviously we both had selection. Like, it wasn't like selection was just about you.
Well, you were a bit more priority pick than me.
So. I don't think so, mate. Trust me, the most dropped player in West Coast history.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Oh, well, welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, look, it was more of an individual thing, you know. Like, how do you deal with that kind of feedback? From a coach to say you're not playing, it can eat away at you and – there's the business, you know, it puts you in a position where people look up to you. They see you as a role model. They think of you as you can't go wrong. You know, there's never going to be issues with you mentally or physically because you're living the life. You know, you've got the best life. There is the best job. You're doing things that kids only dream of doing. And I couldn't feel that way around family and friends because to me, I couldn't look like I was dealing with anything wrong personally because I look at them and I'm thinking, they tell me about their problems, you know, they're dealing with financial problems, medical bills, all that stuff. And I'm like, I don't have any of those concerns. So to them, they look at me like I shouldn't have any problems. So that's how I felt.
Yeah.
And when I had problems dealing with selection, I couldn't turn to anybody or support. Like I talked to Phil Narkle a few times, but he couldn't do so much. You know, he could only support me when it came to cultural things. But as an individual mentally, I didn't really feel like I had anyone to talk to. And that's how it felt individually.
It's hard when you know, you think you want to share a problem with someone and they're like, yeah, good on you, mate. Like, I can't buy a grocery this week and you're worried about not getting picked
exactly.
in football.
That's exactly how it felt. Yep.
That's interesting. Let's move back into footy. Barry Hall did come to the footy club towards the back end of the Bulldogs. I mean, what was it? We haven't spoken to many people on the podcast that have played with Barry Hall and as closely as you would have. Like, you would have been crumbing to him.
Oh, I got a lot closer than that. Tell you what, the showers were a bit scary. Yeah.
Look, big bad Barry. Look at
him. He was a big bad Barry, but he had Will Minson, who was just as big. So I'm like, you guys can just deal with each other over there. Not talking about the dirty shit, but look, I made the worst mistake in preseason when Barry Hall came across. You know, we had a partner up and we were doing boxing sessions. And I didn't really care. But I'm thinking, this is all right. It's boxing. He's not going to go too hard on me. He nearly popped both my shoulders out just from holding the pads for the man. And I'm like, I'm never going with you again, you jerk, because you are going to injure me before I even play another game. And he goes, don't be a little bitch, you know, like in the way he's talking is. And I'm like, fuck, now I've got to toughen up because I got Rocket on my back and now I got Barry Hall that's beating the shit out of me. What am I going to do? You know? So it was a bit like that, yeah.
What was the talk around the club? Like, he was such a, like, menacing figure. Like, he, you know, as an Eagles fan, you punched Brett Staker, Bo Waters went at him. Yes. And then, like, you find out there's this guy coming to your club.
Yep.
Like, what was the chatter around
with
the teammates?
The discussion was first, like, I wonder what his contract's going to be like. And apparently Rodney put it in his contract that he's not allowed to get into any fights. He's not allowed to be vocally violent. And he told Rocket, you can stick that contract up your ass because I'm going to do all those things regardless. So either you want me at the club or you don't. So Rocket said, you know what, stuff it. You can do whatever you want. Long as you come and play in our forward line. And that's what he got. Whatever he wanted was Barry Hall's way. It was so scary. As you said, he's a big figure and an intimidating man that when it came to him getting what he wanted in the football club, he got it.
Were you out there that day that he was fighting with Scotty Thompson?
Yes, I was.
Were you playing that game?
Yes, I was.
Can you Can you remember? You would have been. I was in the forward line.
And I was looking at him, and Thompson was a jerk. You know? Yeah, he was niggling and put the elbow on his back, and I'm thinking, Baz is doing all right. He's holding his nerve. He's not losing his cool. And then I turn around and he's got Scott Thompson in the biggest headlock and all these other guys, McMahon, trying to rip him off. And I think
couldn't get him off.
I think Stacky was trying to get in there and trying to break him up too. And I was like, Stacky, just let it go. You know, and Tommy's going to probably die here. And
he's gone.
And Barry Hall's run off because I heard the runner came out. His little Lukey mean. And he goes, Baz, Rocker said, get the fuck off the ground, you know. And Baz goes, tell Rocker, yeah, fuck it. And then all these other Kangaroos players are getting into Rocker and getting into Barry Hall. And I'm like, Baz, you should probably just get off the ground. He goes, Hilly, you can get fucked. So he's abusing me as a team. I'm like, mate, you're going to cost us another 50. You know, he's given away 250s and they've got a goal out of it.
Meanwhile, Scott Thompson's dead.
Meanwhile, Scott Thompson's trying to get his bloody life back. He's trying to get his vision back impaired. But it was a scary thought to see Tom. I'm like, mate, you are a brave man. And then the second half, he came out and did the exact same thing. And I'm like, this guy, he's got a death wish. That's for sure. Yeah.
Talk to us about the process of getting traded between the Bulldogs and West Coast, coming back home effectively. I know you spent some time in SA, but you're WA. Boy, we'll say that. What was that process like, both leaving the Bulldogs and coming to West Coast?
Look, it was a challenging time individually because I was in the thought process that maybe the Dogs were a place that I was going to spend a long time for. And I think I didn't really realise that I was going to leave until end of, so tell you a funny story. It's funny, but it's also quite sad for me individually because of what I'd missed out on. Okay. So the end of 2010, Rockets called me in his office. He goes, mate, I don't know if you know this, but we're going to put you up for trade. And I'm like, hang on, I've got another year of my contract left. So he's like, yep, we're going to see what we can do for you and see who wants you out there in the AFL. So I was like, all right. So they got to the manager. He told me, he goes, mate, we've got some meetings lined up with Richmond, Hawthorn, and the Eagles. I was like, all right. So I had a meeting with them, went to Richmond, didn't feel comfortable with the place, you know, and I was like, nah. So spoke to Woosh and he goes, mate, come over and play for us. And I was like, yeah, look, it would be good to go home, but I've got my family here. I want to be around them. I don't want to just leave them, you know, the way they are. And then I went to speak to Alistair Clarkson. Straight away, he goes, mate, we'll meet wherever you want to meet. We'll go get a coffee. And I'm like, wow, this guy's willing to do something for me in order for me to come play for him. And just talking to him for an hour or so, it made me feel like I wanted to go play for this guy. So the trade was about to go through. And he's like, mate, we'll make this happen. And I was at that time, I'm thinking in my head, I'm going to go to Hawthorn. And it was just before the three-peat, so the premierships were going to come in the success. I mean, they got Buddy Franklin, they got Cyril, they got Shawnee Burgoyne. The lineup is magic, you know, it's amazing. And I'm like, this is going to be, I'm going to have a great time with these guys, you know, playing alongside them.
Dream come true.
It was basically like that. And then Rocket rings me and goes, mate, I can see what your value is now. We're not going to trade you. And in that time, the media was released that I wanted to leave the club. Not that wanted to put me off a trade. Me individually as a person wanted to go somewhere else. That's how it made me look. So that whole year after in 2011, I was copying it from left, right, center. You know, even my own fans were booing me. The Bulldogs fans didn't make me feel like I wanted to be there. And at that time at the end of the year, you know, Rocket got sacked or moved on. I don't know what happened. Brendan McCartney came in. He goes, mate, I want you to stay. You know, I can see your worth and you should stay here with us. And I'm like, mate, there's too much going on here, off field, on field. I don't feel comfortable anymore. So Woosher rang me. He goes, mate, do you want to come over to Perth and be home? And I'm like, that's all I needed. The escape I was looking for, I'm coming back home. You know, so moving back to WA, there was no brainer. I moved back home.
And so the Hawthorn deal never got.
It was almost about to go through, but Rocket doing what Rocket does prevented that.
Right, and then 2011 when you got traded, it was you know, West Coast, no Hawthorn, because would have walked into a
that had they'd had all their spots filled. You know, Bruce was there, and Gunston I think got drafted, so there was so much players that they'd already filled their positions up with. So there was an opportunity missed. But look, I came across to the Eagles, and we'd had a great year. You know, it was we could have taken it all, but it's the way it was, wasn't it? And then who did we lose in the final against?
That's right. Well, we're not there yet. Like, what's the sort of first few years at West Coast like? So you get there in 2011.
Yep.
We're playing a prelim that year. Did you play that game?
I did.
Yeah.
Yep. Played 22 games that year. Yep. Straight in.
Yeah, look, it was, as I said, you know, I'm a big believer in opportunities, and I got the opportunity to perform, you know. And as I said, like, it was a costly miss for Nikoski and Lacroix to get injured that season, but it was a perfect spot for me to fill in. And I took it as a way to prove myself to not just the club, to everybody around that, you know, doubted me and everything, and prove to people that I had the capabilities of playing as a strong small forward. And I did it. And yeah, that year was really, we had a strong side, and I'm a bit gutted that we didn't make it all the way through, but to play in so many games in that season was really amazing.
It sounds like through your whole career, belief was really important too.
It was. And And that's how I was, you know. I always had that belief in my mind, like, I'm not going to play forever. But it was believing in yourself, because if you've got others, like, my family had so much belief in me, and that's what drove me to prove to them, you know, like, I need them to have that support. And if I didn't believe in myself, then why would others believe in me? And that's the way I looked at it.
And then Woosha was able to sort of, I guess, it sounds like, believe in you as well.
Yeah, well, I'd done things coming across that I didn't really do much at the Dogs, you know, and the pressure, forward pressure, was a big one that they would always talk to me about. And I know the media would always talk about.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
They're saying, you know, like, oh, it's good to see Joshua doing tackling and putting pressure on. And I was like, I had those capabilities at the Bulldogs, but I didn't have that belief in myself because I had so much self-doubt from the way Rocket coached me. And nothing against Rocket. I respect the man for the way he coached me, because he challenged me, and that's what made me to become a stronger person mentally. And then coming across to Woosha, he just showed me more capabilities about myself as a player.
So your debut game for West Coast is against the Bulldogs.
You've been dying to talk about this.
Absolutely. I was meant to dig up the photos. I've got the photos on my phone or somewhere.
Yes.
We play the Bulldogs. You to a point have a point to prove, right? Yes. Like, I mean, you've heard just through the first part of this interview, not that you left on bad terms, but you probably wanted to show them what they were missing out on.
Yep.
And I remember preparing for that game, and we were pretty supportive of the fact, like, we wanted to kind of back you in. I think like, we as teammates, like, we accepted you in, like, quickly, because you're a good player and a good bloke.
Yep.
And I remember coming to that game, like, sort of thinking, like, how are we going to get Hilly to go well? And the Bulldogs, on the other hand, they came for you, didn't they?
They did. It was the first one that came to me was Dylan Addison. And his main role throughout the whole time playing alongside him was just to be a pain in the ass, just to niggle blokes, you know, get into their heads and take their focus away from the game. So as soon as he's walked up to me, he starts pinching me. Little things, like little niggles that he'd do. He'd pinch me, he'd punch me in the ribs, he'd throw the elbows around. I'm like, mate, what are you doing? You know, we're former teammates. And he goes, I'm going to beat the shit out of you today. And I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to try and kick a few goals on you here. And you saw how it was. Every time I would go near the ball, or I didn't touch it, I think, until the second quarter. And I think the Bulldogs fans were loving that, because I was kept quiet. So I'd kick my first goal, and it was the top of the goal square. And JK's coming to me, giving me a hug. All the boys got around me. And then I've seen him coming at me again, and I've smiled him. I gave him a wink, you know, like, that's one. Yeah. And he's just thrown the elbow straight in my chest, and they were all just beating, trying to get into me. And it was like that the whole game. And by the end of the game, on the flight back, both my arms were just purple from pinch marks. Like, I was bruised all the way from shoulder to my fingers.
I've got to pull the photo of this. Yep. It's the worst in my entire career I've seen a player. Like, I've seen injuries and all that stuff. I've seen, like, you know, scratch marks from just accidents. Hilly looked like he had been, like, whipped, mate. Yep. Like, the entire from shoulder to wrist on both arms were like someone had got a peg and was just, like, ripping him to shreds. It's actually outrageous. I will 1,000 get the photo, because I've still got it somewhere.
Believe it or not, that is the worst that I've had to deal with with a niggler.
Who else?
I played on Steve Baker.
Oh, really?
From the Saints. Mate, the ball was down the other end of the ground, and he would be next to me, and he'd beat the crap out of my knuckles. He'd just be pummeling them nonstop. And I'm like, mate, what are you doing? And he goes, what are you going to do about it? I'm like, well, I can't do anything about it, because I don't want to miss any games. You know, I'm going to get reported. He goes, well, exactly. So I'm going to keep doing it. And the whole time I'd be looking at the game, he'd just be there punching my knuckles the whole game. And I had bruise marks everywhere throughout my hands after that. He goes, how are you feeling? And I'm like, mate, I want to beat the shit out of you. That's how I feel. He goes, go on then. Do it. So he was trying to, you know, intimidate me and get in my head. And I'm like, I didn't think about it until after the game. I'm like, that was his tactic, because I know he couldn't keep up with me. He couldn't run with me, couldn't do all these things. So he had to try and take me physically and mentally. And he got in my head. I think I kicked three on him anyway, but he still was doing his job, you know. And that was, I think, the way the game was back then. Everyone had their own little traits on how they try to prevent their opponents from getting the football. I mean, you're a niggling arsehole in the back line. You know your little tactics.
Because you guys would have played Probably not directly on each other, but you would have been in the back line, forward line. No, do you remember playing on each other?
I think we played on each other in our first game.
Yeah.
I had
Chicky more than him. Chicky just loved beating me up.
My first three games in the AFL, sorry, three of my first five games in the AFL were against the Bulldogs. So I would have played against Hilly.
There you go.
Definitely. I played two games of the Bulldogs in 2008, and you played every game that year. So
there you go.
I probably would have played on you, no doubt beating you.
I had Ginner a few times, can you believe it or not? Ginner as a defender.
Ginner, just a little scragger. 2015 for West Coast. It's a big year, really. You win the Glendenning medal, the Glendenning Allen medal, but back then it was the Glendenning medal. You kick four in a derby, sizzling.
Yep.
And we make a grand final as well. That's a big year of footy.
Yeah, look, the build-up to that week, you know, I'd come off from a bit of an injury from my left shoulder. I'd had surgery into that season. And I remember we played the Magpies a few weeks before at Marvel Stadium. And I didn't realise how bad it was until afterwards. You know, that four-hour flight coming across, my arm felt like it was going to fall off. And I remember the incident because I'd had the ball in this arm and I've gone to brace myself. So side bottom's tackled me and Dane Swan's come even like behind. And, you know, he's not a light figure. So he's come and I could just feel my shoulder just pop out completely. And I felt like I lost the whole arm at that point. And I played the rest of the quarter, but I told Simo, I said, mate, my arm's done. I can't even move it. So I played the week after, strapped it up against the Swans and couldn't get much of the footy. And he goes, mate, why don't we give you a rest? So I was like, all right. And then the derby come along and believe it, I was the biggest derby in history because we were first and second on the ladder, weren't we? It was a major history for the town. And
is that right?
Yeah.
So it was late in the year?
It was late in the year. It was round 20, I believe. And we were both sitting second and first on the ladder. Dockers had a great year that year. They were sitting top and we had a point to prove. And I think they were beating us a few weeks, few derbies before that. So it was kind of that build up to it of, you know, the game itself, the media, the pump up. Like, we know how WA loves their derbies. And then going into that game, I was thinking, am I going to be all right to play this game? Because my shoulder is still feeling a bit sore. And then coming out and kicking four and kicking two in the last quarter, you know, and sealing it was, yeah, great feeling. And then to win the medal, I know I still cop it from some of the boys now, but, you know, you got to embrace those individual acts. But it was more about winning and the occasion itself, you know, to win in WA against a team that's top of the ladder. We're sitting second. We had a point to prove and we won that game.
What do you cop it for? What was your speech like?
I don't remember. Yeah, but I remember that JK.
Suck shit.
JK and Laker were saying at training, they're like, oh, you still got your medal on? I think you can still see it there through your jumper. And I'm like, mate, you're just jealous because you don't have one. That's how it was. So, yeah.
Got three Brownlow votes that game.
Oh, there you go. Well, probably huge. The only votes I got my whole career. So
no, you got one other. You got one vote in 08.
There you go. Small fours don't get many votes. No. Yeah.
We played in grand final in 2015. What are your memories from that day?
I think he was, yeah, look, the build up to it of itself, you know, was exciting because, you know, having the state behind you and the Eagles fans, you know how they pump it up and they make you feel like you feel like a rock star, don't you? I mean, we're traveling across to the other side of the country and we had it at the open training session on the Tuesday. There was so many people there. There were thousands of people rocking up and they were watching us train and then getting on the flight, you know, even at the airport, there were so many fans and they were just, you know, giving us that embrace and recognition and then driving across across country from Perth to Melbourne to come and support us was amazing. And then I knew that the rallies itself, like the grand final parade was exciting watching it. But then to be in the back of the car and see so many Eagles fans just makes you feel like, wow, we have so much support in this country. It's amazing.
Who did you sit next to in the car?
Oh, I hated it. I was next to that tall black fellow, Nick Nat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so I didn't get much recognition at all. You know, I was sitting next to him. But
that may have been the worst person to sit next
to. He was the worst.
I
even asked when we got in the car, I was like, can I swap, please? Because I don't want to sit next to him. And he was getting it everywhere. Oh, Nick Nat, I love you. And he goes, what about Hilly? And they're like, Nick Nat, can I get a photo later? Yeah. I was like, whatever.
Could you please take a photo for us?
He was actually, they were telling him, can take photos of me and Nick Nat. I was like, whatever. Yeah. And that was our day to day life here anyway because I hated it. But he's like, hey, let's go get a coffee. Like, I don't want to go with you because I don't want to be in public with you. He would just get recognised everywhere. Yep.
What was the game like?
Oh, look, I think we'd had a chance. I mean, we were doing really well in the first half. And I think in AFL games, it's about the moments, you know. And that one moment, I can still remember it. You know, Jack Darling running back, the ball's dropped between his hands. It then goes between his legs. He's missed the tackle. They've gone down the other end. And Hawthorn, that was so strong with just that fast ball movement. They'd kicked the goal and they just took the whole momentum. We were coming back. We had a few goals on the board then. And that momentum shift going back towards them, I think that was it. You know, for any chance for us to come back, it just kind of was taken away in that one moment. And I hate putting JD on the spot, but if he'd taken that mark and kicked it, I reckon we were a chance to win at that game.
Knowing what you know now, you don't get another opportunity at it. Does that make that day? How do you feel about it? Is it? Do you have regrets or do you? Or
no
do
regrets you, at all. Like yeah. my AFL career, I feel privileged, you know, to get the opportunity to do it. And knowing a lot of families and young people now, you know, aspiring to be AFL players, if they don't get that opportunity, I tell them, you know, like to be able to spend that many years in the AFL, I feel privileged to even be able to play one game. And I look at them and I think, I see so many players, like you've seen it, you know, players come into the system and they don't even get an opportunity, you know, to be able to play one AFL game. That's what one thing I still have in my mind is that Aka told me when I first started my career at the Dogs, he goes, mate, you're not an AFL player until you play an AFL game. And it stuck in my head for such a long time. And I think that was what the easy thing was knowing that, yes, you're on an AFL list, but the hard thing is holding your position as an AFL player. So you're going to get selected, yes, but there are other people fighting for your position. And that's how it was for my journey.
That's cool. We spoke to Brad Johnson when we were in Adelaide for Gather Round. That episode, I don't know if it's come out yet or not, but you know, he's a guy who had so much success and was awesome, played Bulldogs a long time and just, but never got that opportunity. And like you said, just that, those opportunities you're grateful for.
Really, yeah. And I look at guys like that, you know, playing over 300 games and never playing in a grand final itself, to even know that I've got to that stage, it's a blessing, you know, to know that even as a player that hasn't played over 200 games or 300 to be able to play in an AFL grand final. I mean, you look at guys like Daniel Venables, you know, like he's had a really tough run with the injury, but to win a premiership, I mean, he would be telling people every day for the rest of his life how blessed and privileged he is to have that opportunity.
Did you ever watch the game back, 2015?
Oh, no. Nah, it's too hard to watch. I mean,
that's a tough one.
I do like watching the first final, though, against the Hawks. That
yeah,
I think was it Friday night? Or
yeah,
Sunday?
Friday night.
Friday night at Subiaco Oval.
Chopped them.
We smashed them. You know, that feeling beating them that game was like, we've got a chance here. We're gonna win the grand final.
I reckon it would have been better if we had won like in a close one. Yeah. But I think we beat them by that much. We'll just do this in the grand final.
Easy. No worries. We thought like that, yeah. And look, the way we started that game was like, we were a different side. We had so much belief in ourselves and the ball movement we were moving, kicking goals. Like JK was kicking them from boundary lines outside 50. And I'm like, this guy's not gonna miss, you know. And then you get to the grand final and he couldn't really get a goal. I don't think he scored that grand final, did he?
Should have put a block on for him.
Well, I tried to. You got Brian Lake and Josh Gibson beating the crap out of me too, so I'm not going to stop those guys. How am I going to do that?
Frawley was almost
James Frawley. Was, yeah, and we smashed him. You know, Frawley couldn't even stop him that game. And then he did such a great job in the grand final. I'm like, wow. So as I said, it's all about moments, you know, and they took their moment in the grand final.
So 16 and 17 go by, a couple of tough years for the club, and you finish. What's your reflections, you know, end of your career?
Oh, look, as I said, you know, the opportunity to be able to be at the club for 6 years was amazing in itself, to be able to share the journey with you guys as long as I did. I'm privileged, but yeah, there's that state where a lot of players, when they come out of the system, you know, like you're so beneficial in what you have handed to you. You know, you've got so much support in the club, like you've got a sports psych, you've got massage, you've got your ice baths, you've got spas, you've got so many things there. You got sponsorships from, you know, sporting brands, that you just have everything handed to you, to then go into the real world knowing that that's your reality now, is that working a 9-to-5 job, you know, supporting yourself. You don't have the support you did once as an AFL player. You still get some sort of recognition, but it's that transition, you know, like that's why I chose to go back to Victoria, because the opportunities opened up in terms of working in media, coaching, done a lot of work over there with, you know, the Flying Boomerangs, doing work now with media, commentating, and I love it, you know. But there was that period for, I think, 2 years coming out of the game that I was really in a dark place, you know, mentally, because my mental health just couldn't cope with it. I didn't have the support I needed. It was all an individual choice on my own, because it was also the fact of knowing that I'd missed out on the AFL Grand Final in 18, but knowing that the guys got to achieve that, I felt so, you know, embraced and supportive of them to get that recognition that they did, because they deserved it. You know, you guys were a strong side in 18. And to be able to commentate that game, I broke down, mate. I was commentating the last game and I was tearing up, because I was like, this is amazing.
Is that right?
And to see you guys win it, you know, like I'd wished I was there, but to see you guys get the recognition and the win that you got in such a close game was amazing to be a part of it. Just to be able to commentate it made me feel like I was out there with you guys.
It's a bloody tough one, isn't it? Because I remember one of the first people I saw once we'd won it, we went to the crowd, was Sharad. Mm. So Sharad finished up the same year as you.
Yep.
And he was a big part, you know, probably like quite similar career to you. Started at one club.
Yep.
Was lucky enough to win a flag there. Came to West Coast, had a stint at West Coast and finished you know, the year before the grand final, and he was in tears. And you know, I was in tears because you share a lot together as teammates, but then not everyone can do it, right? Yeah. You know, like it's you know that's how footy is as well. It it's brutal.
Yeah, it's a cutthroat business. You know, like it does it does dwell on you as a player, but you've got to recognise the guys that are there. You know, and as I said, I didn't play many games in 17 because it was like. There were challenges to hold a position and, you know, Lekker was doing such a great job. Cripps, Darling, you know, we had a strong forward line still then at that point. Willie Rioli was dominating. And I think Liam Ryan didn't play many games until the grand final, you know, in 18. So it's like you were cemented with a strong side, but obviously being out of the system at that time, you'd want to be a part of it. So it does eat away at you in a certain aspect mentally, but you got to cherish for you boys, you know, like what you got. And you deserved it, that grand final.
Did you get down to the rooms?
I did, yeah. And the first guy I hate that walked up to me was Lewis Jetta. He rubbed the medal in my face, but I gave him a hug and gave him a cry. Nah, look, I said to Louis, you know, you guys deserved it. And I cried with him, you know, like we embraced it together and I felt a part of the family again. You know, like being away for a whole year to see you guys cherish that moment and winning the grand final was amazing because it wasn't just myself, you know. Like there were guys that were on the list that weren't playing, Nick Nat, Gaffey. Who else missed out? Shep. So many guys that missed out on that that moment. Easy, like it was hard for them as well. You know, still being in the AFL with these guys to not be able to actually share it on the field would have been even more harder for them.
You spoke about sort of coming out of the game, the transition being difficult. I probably was in the same area, mate. I found it really difficult. You go from a highly regulated, highly supported industry, the elite industry though, like it's the best in the country at what you're doing. So you're a high performer and you come out and you don't walk into a high performance job. Very rarely do players, you know, go from, I don't know, like a, you know, footballer, you know, top 10, you know, top 100 footballer in Australia to a top 100, whatever else you're doing, media performer. It's difficult to make that transition.
Yep.
And you spoke about being in a bit of a dark place mentally. Just keen to hear like what you thought like were the major contributors to that. And like, would you do anything differently or, like, would you have an advice for others in the same spot? Like, when you're sort of having been through that and now maybe been out the other side a bit?
Look, it was a lot like what I touched on before, you know, is that that ego in a way. Not so much an ego, but, like, that belief that you can't have anything wrong with you. Like, I've come from being in that industry. Financially, I was still well off, you know, I was really well supported. But it was knowing then that transition of going from being around people that could support me mentally to then being so alone in a way, you know, like I've moved back to Victoria, which was a choice of my own, but it was also challenging because I'd left the family. I'd left things that were going on here back in WA. And I thought if I went to Victoria and turned my focus on working and doing all these things, it would make me, you know, the distraction was what I needed, you know, to be away from not playing because it was too hard. You know, seeing the guys play every week here in 2018, I couldn't be around it because I was like, I wish I was a part of it. You know, like we'd done the tour or we saw the opening of the new facilities for the Eagles. And I'm like, this is going to be amazing. You know, I can't wait to be a part of it. Then to know you're getting let go end of that year before it actually opens, it can be quite hard, you know, to process. But I think for a lot of people, when you go through that challenging mental phase, you know, you don't bottle it up. You don't deal with it individually. You talk to people. And I think it took a while for me to accept that it's okay to be emotional. It's okay to speak to somebody about your challenges with your mental phases. Like if you don't discuss it with somebody that can support you, you're not going to be able to deal with it because you're not going to have all the answers. And as I said, to me, coming out of the game for such a long period, I felt like I couldn't have any challenges because as I said, like, as you mentioned, you know, I've got family members that are dealing with so much worse than what I'm dealing with. So I had that strong belief that I'm going to be able to deal with this in my own way, but I couldn't. And I think that's what got the better of me. So my message really is don't let it bottle you up. Don't just try and deal with it individually. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, somebody that you can relate to and get the help you needed.
It's really good, mate. I like it. You've been playing footy since you jumped out. What are some highlights there? What's the most you kicked in the game? You'd have been kicking a few bags, wouldn't you? Who been
playing with? I think I kicked 7 one game. But
you told me you kicked 7 last week.
I did actually. No, look, I've kicked 7 the last 2 weeks, added up. So four the first week, 3 the week after. But my highlight thing playing now in local league is having Sam Butler as a coach.
Wow.
I didn't listen to him. Head coach, believe it or not. And I did not listen to him one bit because I'm like, Butsy, you can't tell me as a forward how to play as a forward. You've never played there in your life. So it was a bit like that. But look, having Butsy as a coach was quite a comedic year to have a bit of a laugh with him. But he knew his stuff, you know, and I love watching him go to work. And I think he had Nat there in his ear as well, you know, was motivating him to give some strong messages. And I think all of the messages as he gave as a coach came from her, because he's not really strong with his powerful speaking. And but yeah, like to have him as a coach was really great to have, you know, a mate come across from the Eagles to come and work with on the same field. It was good.
What do you like about the media work now that you're doing?
Oh, look, I love it that you can give your own insight to a player's mindset, you know, from being able to relate to them on the field.
Yep.
Whereas a lot of commentators can talk on as a viewer, you know, like a lot of commentators, they commentate as a supporter. You know, being in the corporate box, they talk and they discuss the game, but they've never played the game. And I think that's the difference that I can bring, you know, and I love that, is knowing that I can see a player's mindset of what they're dealing with. And being a special comments, it helps me to help the listeners and viewers understand that, you know, they're not perfect. They're going to have problems. The mental challenges they deal with, you know, like you see players miss two or three goals and they're like, oh, you know, he's shit. You know, he's playing a shit game. What's he going to do now? Why don't we drop him this year? And it was like that for me. Like I'm thinking, I'm performing out here, but I don't know what's going on off field. You know, I don't know what people are saying on their couches or at home on the media. And I remember BT used to give me a lot of shit, you know, saying that I didn't tackle well or I missed a few tackles here and there. And I'm thinking, I'm going to go watch this guy's clips. And he was not the strongest tackler himself, you know. So it was like that, you know. And that's why I love doing this media work, because I can actually relate to the players and say, you know, like, yeah, it's challenging, but it's up to his teammates to get him up and about. Like, it's not just a player's individual mindset. You've got to get support from your teammates to get your confidence back on board. And it was like that.
That's cool.
Anything else for Hilly?
Let's get some questions.
All right, Lidard, it is time. At the point in time, you've heard enough from Dan and I. It's time for social media.
Social media.
You would remember social media from the old back chat days.
I do remember,
like,
yep.
Talking about West Coast, like Eagle Nation,
you
Squawk Talk.
You started Eagle Nation, didn't you?
Oh, all that. Not Eagle Nation. I started Squawk Talk.
Squawk Talk, that's it.
I started the Nest or something. Some garbage.
Yeah, some terrible names, but it works.
Well, social media has survived, Hilly.
Yes.
This is where the people get to ask you the questions. Okay. Are you ready? I think there's some hard-hitting ones in there. No,
Bring them on.
Jack Sims, _.
Who's the best captain you've played under, and why is his current captain at St. Albans the best?
St. Albans.
Yeah, sorry. Look, he played his 350th actually on the weekend.
What's
his
name?
Jack Sims.
Oh, that's from Jack Sims.
He said that, did he? Wow. Simsy sending in his own comment questions.
Right. Come on,
like look that. At that. He's pumping himself up. So, yeah, look, he's played his 350th and, you know, credit to the man to be able to play so many games, you know, and 350 in the local league is huge. And to get the win for him on the weekend was massive.
Very good. Yep. Langer's 97.
Best goal you've ever kicked?
Oh, look, I've kicked a few good goals, but I take the nickname opportunist, you know, like ultimate opportunist, and I love that nickname because that's how my game was all based around. You know, like I didn't get a lot of direct access to the ball because it was always JK, it was Darling getting kicked to. So I was always about the crumbing and kicking all these crafty goals. And I love that first final against the Hawks because I think we'd dominate them. But the last quarter, there was a kick from Nick Nat to the contest in the pocket, and JK's made a contest, has come towards the boundary. I'd had a few Hawks players around me and I've just thrown the boot at it midair, didn't touch it with my hands and it's gone through the middle sticks. And
it's a good one.
Good feeling after kicking that goal.
It was a bit better than your FIFA back in the day, mate. I remember you used to just absolutely bully you on FIFA.
Well, actually, I believe winning a tournament because Luke Shuey was carrying on like we've kicked three goals, you know, and I've come back after the halftime and I don't know if you were there that day. We played at Butsy's house, I think it was. And anyway,
you won a FIFA tournament.
Won a FIFA.
I can't remember.
Yes, well, you weren't there. There you go. but yeah, like Shuey's carried on, like, we're going to smash you guys, you know, and we're going to win this. And anyway, we ended up winning it by the end with 10 seconds ago. And he's thrown the remote and he's nearly smashed the whole PlayStation setup and walked down the road sulking. I'm like, mate, someone go pick his lip up, please, you know, because he's carrying on a bit.
Go pick his lip up. Yeah. Okay. So I like this question. This is a bit of knowledge here. Isaac WT_.
Do you think you deserve more credit for kicking that point just before Nick Nat kicked the match winner against the Giants?
Well, put it this way, mate. If we didn't have the point, would we win the game?
Right.
No.
That's so credit's due where it is due.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I will take that point. And I said to Nick Nat on the bus ride, I was like, you know that you kicked the goal, but without my point, we wouldn't have won the game. So there you go.
On the goal kicking, I was just watching some highlights before. You love to go to the crowd on the celebration.
Because my teammates are never around me. That's why. I work hard in the forward line and then by that time, they're nowhere around me.
There's that one that you just go and you were hugging a guy in the crowd. Was that did you know him or just the first person you saw?
Just the first person I saw. And I actually heard that apparently Whack Andrew Embley went up to him during the week and said, mate, you got free tickets for it to go to the grand final.
Really?
So, yeah. Did you not hear about this?
What?
I got tagged in socials that this guy that I hugged in the crowd got free grand final tickets to the AFL grand final in 2015 to go to the game because I hugged him.
Is that right?
Wow. That is how you look it up. It's hilarious.
That's funny.
Yeah. You saw the clip of him hugging him.
Yeah, yeah. He just runs to the crowd and he's in full embrace of this guy.
Oh, yeah, I got sick of celebrating with JK because I'm like, mate, you kicked enough goals. I don't want to give you any more credit.
JK_Perry, you can answer this or not.
What caused your delisting? I remember being shocked when the Eagles called the axe.
Look, it was a big axing actually because there was 12 players that left that year, if you remember. There was a huge change-up with it. Yeah, the Pritt had retired as well. It's a tough process to deal with and mentally it's quite challenging. But look, the way it all went about was – it was we had players on the radar. Liam Ryan was about to get drafted. Willie Rioli was an up-and-comer, small forward. He was dangerous. And it was obviously that time where players come and go. And we'd had a small forward line set up. And Simo had called me in his office and said, mate, we're going to see what we can do with you for next year because, you know, Lekker might be retiring, so you might be staying around for the year after. And a lot of fans don't hear these things, what happened on, because it's closed-door policy and it's a strict business and very cutthroat. But It was to that point where it was either me or Lekker to stay on. And Lekker, you know, signing on for another year, got to play on for one more year, wins a grand final. You know, credit to the man. He deserves all the recognition he deserves. And for me, that was my time to come, you know. So it's a tough business, but you got to accept it. And as I said, I'm privileged and blessed to be able to play as many games as I did, and I'm grateful for it.
Well answered. Good answer. Very good. Yeah. Real_Squidly.
Who is your idol?
Well, it's not Will Schofield. Fuck off. My idol. Look, growing up, I've had a lot of idols, but my mum's always been one that's been there to support me. My grandmother intimidates the crap out of me. She beat the shit out of me, would throw things and hit me with things. But from a football perspective, my idol growing up, I played against the man in my second game, was Andrew McLeod. The way he was, just silky smooth, so comfortable. He never looked like he was under stress. Yes. And just an amazing player.
John_Dawson.
How do we develop more Indigenous players through high schools?
Well, that all really comes down to recruiting, really. Like, I know that the AFL does the recruiting, but in high schools, you've got to go up to the Kimberleys. You've got to go out to the bush. You've got to look for the talent. You've got to provide those opportunities for these young players. And I know that there are programs in place like Clontarf, Aquinas, Trinity. They do all these things from a private school point of view, but you've got to get out there more. You know, you've got to provide these opportunities, reassure these young Aboriginal kids that they've got the potential, but it's the challenging side is obviously that commitment and sacrifice. Are they willing to leave their families at home to pursue an opportunity to play in the AFL? Do they believe in themselves that they can do that? And if they can't, then that's the answer you need. There's no point really following it up. But it's about the camps and the opportunities that they can do.
When you say out bush, like, do you think it's is it highly likely that there's, you know, more talented kids that we've never seen before that just, you know, can't make those sacrifices?
Yep. To play? Look, I hate to say it, but I played one game up in Darwin for Tiwi and I nearly died because of the heat. But there is so much talent up there. The flair and excitement these young kids have up there, it's amazing. You know, the ability and the agility they have on the field, they just don't get those opportunities. And I know that there are recruiters up there that bring them down, like Cyril's obviously from up there. All the Motlops and Davies, they're all from Darwin. But there's so many kids that are playing local leagues, you know, that are running around. And they don't have that commitment side because they're working or they've got family commitments that they've got to be for. And, I think if there's that recognition that they go out from away from the big competitions to just the local leagues, there's so much talent about. They've just got to go and look for it.
You got any opinion on a 20th team in Darwin?
Well, I heard that they're trying to put together an all Aboriginal team. So
would that work?
That'd be exciting.
You come out of retirement?
Well, there'd be no loss, would there?
You come out of retirement, really?
I'll cold coach. There you go. I can help. I've got my Cert 3 in coaching, actually. So I could be an AFL coach.
Would it work up there, or do you not know?
Oh, look, it would be a challenge because I know that every time we'd play up there, we'd have the ice room behind the change rooms. So for a lot of teams that would travel up to play every weekend, like, it would be quite.
Be too hot up there.
Be too hot.
And home court advantage, though.
Yeah, I know. A massive home court advantage. But, I mean, look at Tassie. You know, they're coming out of the woodworks. They're forming their own size now, the Devils. And so why wouldn't there be an opportunity to maybe put it in another state? Mm. So that could be something to pursue maybe down the track.
Josh Carter, coach of the
– it's JC, mate.
Yeah, JC. Okay.
Coach Carter. Okay. Coach Carter, remember
Coach
that?
Carter.
Far out.
Yeah. Perfect name. Rich Ward. Perfect name. Don't coach Carter. Remember that, please.
Coach Hilly Dard. Last question, Eggman.
How does Hilly like his eggs?
Oh, look, I'm a big Eggs Benedict man. So
are you?
Yep. Every time I go to a cafe, if I see Eggs Benedict on the menu, there's no question.
You like salmon? Like salmon?
No, I like the ham.
The ham?
Yeah. No one likes salmon, mate.
I can't remember having a Benedict.
No, it's not a common one. Poached. We get a lot of poached.
A lot of poached?
A lot of scrambled, but Benedict.
It's the Eggs Benedict for me.
Yeah, it's good.
Mate, good chat. I think a great sort of journey piece, given that we both debuted in the same game, both sort of working in media, trying to find our way out in the real world.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us on Backchat.
No worries, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Backchat powered by Paywise this season. Backchatstudios.com.au. A big thanks to all of our sponsors, Whippersnapper, Mama Digital, Tab Touch, Shelter Brewing Co., Leadable Precinct, ID Athletic, doing all the good things they do. If you want to join us as a VIP, you can sign up as a patron. And you can find all of our merch, guests, and everything else at backchatstudios.com.au. See you on the other side, Hilly.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast, then net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.